winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Well, no surprise, in a state of immigrants, the controversy in D.C. has reached to Albany.
Jimmy Vielkind of Politico New York will join Casey at the Reporters Roundtable after we take a listen in to Governor Cuomo's recent press appearance in Schenectady, where he helped open the new Rivers Casino.
There's a bill heading to your desk that would essentially abrogate a proposed bag tax fee in New York City. Will you sign that measure?
We got the bill. We recently got the bill, and we're still reviewing it.
Is it a tough position to be in there? I mean, obviously, it's the Democratic Assembly essentially overturning the city council, and it kind of just landed on your desk, became your problem. Would you prefer it not be?
You know, Zach, the only things that land on my desk are the tough ones. By definition, the easy ones get done somewhere along the road. You know, when they get to me, they're all tough ones. So this is it's a complicated issue. There are real environmental concerns, but there are also economic concerns. You know, you charge people 5 cents for every plastic bag. Doesn't sound like much. It adds up, especially many people who are suffering from economic times. And then the bill would give the money to the grocery store. Why? You know? So there are a lot of complicated issues. We're going through it, and we'll have a decision soon.
Governor, how important is it going to be to you to have the DREAM Act in the final budget plan?
It's been very important to me from day one. We've been working very hard for many years now to get it passed. The Senate has adamantly refused. Every year, it appears that they're going to adamantly refuse again this year.
Governor, you've spoken up about the need to protect immigrants. You support the DREAM Act. You've talked about the Legal Defense Fund. Should the state take one step further and declare itself a sanctuary state?
Well, the Assembly passed a bill that said that. We have to review the bill because exactly what a quote-unquote sanctuary state is a little ambiguous, right? The Senator said the bill is unconstitutional. So we'll look at the specifics of the bill. But this is a state that protects and supports immigrants, period. This is a state that is founded by immigrants. When there's discussions about deporting immigrants, I say start with me, because I'm an immigrant, right? I came from Andrea and Immacolata Cuomo, poor Italians who came here for a job, like poor Irish came here and poor Asians came here and all across the board. So we are all about immigrants, and we have programs and a culture that promotes and supports immigrants, that brings new immigrants into society. State runs a program called the New Americans Program, right? Expediting people joining our society. So that is our stance, that's our philosophy, that's our belief. To the extent the federal government enforces its interpretation of the immigration law, they do that on their own without state resources.
Governor, you've talked a lot about making New York a progressive leader, and in your State of the State written message, you talked about restructuring marijuana laws. You haven't embraced recreational marijuana, even as other states have, and I'm wondering, you know, why are you kind of a stick in the mud about recreational marijuana?
Why am I a stick in the mud about recreational marijuana? That's a sort of loaded question, wouldn't you say there, Jimmy?
Well, no, I mean,
I think that sort of has an opinion in it. I support medical marijuana. I don't support recreational marijuana. Apparently you do, which explains some of the stories you've been writing. Now, recreational marijuana, I think, should be separated from the workplace, right? Do we agree on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
But
I just wanted to make sure.
You've smoked marijuana. You've said that you've done so.
Yes.
Why not recreational marijuana? Lots of New Yorkers smoke marijuana.
Yeah, well, because the flip side argument, as you know, is it's a gateway drug and marijuana leads to other drugs. And there's a lot of proof that that's true. So there's two sides to the argument. But I, as of this date, I am unconvinced on recreational marijuana. If you choose to use marijuana recreationally, you know the law. But again, as reporters, I think you should keep it out of the workplace. But it does explain a lot to me, Jimmy. I want you to know that.
All right, well, that was Governor Cuomo having a little bit of fun at the expense of Jimmy Vielkind of Politico New York, who joins us at the Reporters Roundtable. Thanks very much for coming in. So, Jimmy, I thought it was odd that the governor did not mention the fact that in his State of the State addresses, he has recommended, again, the decriminalization of small amounts of pot.
Well, to an extent, right? Small amounts of marijuana is already not a criminal offense in New York, which is to say it's not a misdemeanor or a felony charge. You get a citation, a UPM, which is basically like a traffic ticket. In most places, police don't handcuff you. They don't take you to the station. They just literally write you the ticket, take the drugs, and send you away.
Jaywalking.
Precisely. But what has happened was in 2012, there was a pretty big push among criminal justice advocates to change the law because there was a disparity that came up really through New York City's stop and frisk program. Under current law, if marijuana is possessed in public view, even if it's a small amount of marijuana, it can be charged as a misdemeanor. You can be arrested. You can be fingerprinted, the whole nine yards. And what was happening in New York City was that predominantly young men of color were being stopped and frisked. They were being told, empty your pockets. And then, once the marijuana comes out of the pockets, it's in public view, and these people were getting arrested. So there was a really big backlash about this point about marijuana policy. But since Bill de Blasio was elected mayor of New York City, since a federal judge had struck down major parts of New York City's stop and frisk program, this has receded. And as you point out, Governor Cuomo did repropose it this year in his State of the State book. But I was interested in just, you know, I think we're up to 9 states that have legalized recreational marijuana. Yeah. Governor Cuomo talks a lot about how New York is the progressive capital of the world, but he hasn't been particularly progressive on this topic. And so, you know, I wanted to get a reaction why, and fortunately,
well,
had a little
great
fun
fencing
with
the governor. So also this week, and also in that Q&A, the governor responded to, he said he continued to support the DREAM Act, which appears to be just as dead as can be in the GOP-controlled Senate, and also the Assembly's passage of a sanctuary, what has been dubbed a sanctuary state law. Once again, of course, immigration is right in the middle of the national debate, and it seems to be moving to the center of the state political debate as well.
That's right, and I think one of the most interesting things about this legislative session is the extent to which President Trump and his agenda have inflected down on what we're talking about in Albany. Something I didn't anticipate, I don't think, something, of course, politicians eager to push their own agenda didn't really anticipate. But the sanctuary state bill was passed by Democrats who dominate the state assembly on Monday, but it did not sail through easily. The final vote was 77 to 61.
Narrow.
There were, in a 150-vote chamber, so 76 votes to pass. There were 19 Democrats who voted against it. There were some upstate members who you might expect, people like Anthony Brindisi of Utica, Robin Schimminger of Buffalo, but there were suburban members, people like Amy Paulin and David Buchwald of Westchester, who normally are pretty to the left in the political spectrum, progressive Democrats, but they voted no on this bill, which I think is a tea leaf for its, you know, the fact that it does strike quite a nerve. And now Cuomo, when he was asked about this, and he was asked about it twice, he was first asked about it by reporters in Western New York on Wednesday of this week, and he sort of talked past the question. He said, oh, we welcome immigrants, and I'm the son of immigrants, and if you're going to deport immigrants, start with me, which is something he has said recently. In Schenectady, speaking with reporters before he opened the Rivers Casino, Governor Cuomo again talked past the bill but said he'd have to review it. So what I took from that was he's not ready to embrace this.
No, clearly.
He's not hugging this. And I expected that maybe he would, during his State of the State messages, come out with some proposal that was like this. So I guess we know that
there's a line.
There is a line for him. There's a line for Democrats.
The DREAM Act, however, is well on this side of the line of things he's willing to support. It's also being propounded by members of the Senate IDC, including Senator Jose Peralta, who just jumped from the mainline Democratic Conference to the IDC. Last weekend, he encountered very serious protests in his district, pushback against his jump. It is almost as if people are only now realizing that the IDC have been partnered in coalition with the Senate GOP, and they're not very happy about it. Once again, as you noted, seemingly inflected by the ascension of Donald Trump.
Well, that's just the thing. There is anger among Democrats. Maybe not even anger, but more frustration and energy. People are taking to the streets. And here you have being channeled, and you could argue whether it's fair or unfair, on a local issue, on Peralta, on the IDC, which mainstream Democrats and some liberals say is basically buttressing Republican power in the New York State Senate. Now, Peralta and members of the IDC argue that through their alliance with Republicans, they'll be better able to push progressive priorities onto the chamber's agenda. And high on that list is the DREAM Act, which of course extends the state's tuition assistance programs for undocumented immigrants. Now, what we hear from Republicans who control the chamber is no.
You know,
a hard no.
For years and years.
Right, but we did see in 2014 a vote on the DREAM Act, something that the IDC's leader, Jeff Klein, won at the time, and we saw that vote fail. There were even some mainstream Democrats, I think Ted O'Brien of Rochester was one of them, he's since been voted out of the chamber, who voted against it. So I don't know what the fate of that bill is. I don't know if it will come to the floor, but it's certainly a pressure point on the IDC. We're already hearing, as you said, people facing Peralta at a town hall meeting. I spoke with Mike Reich, a leader of the Queens Democratic Party, who suggested that the machine might back a primary challenger to Peralta mm-hmm. in 2018.
Nobody loves a major winter storm like Governor Andrew Cuomo. And when I say like, I mean he feels very much of use. So much, in fact, that amid Thursday's big dump, up here in the Capital Region, really big dump downstate, especially out on Long Island, his office saw fit to put out a press release with 8 photos attached, and we're going to look at some of them right now, showing the governor helping a stranded motorist, the governor and several state employees, helping a stranded motorist out of a ditch at the side of the Springbrook Parkway. The man loves disasters, doesn't he?
He loves disasters. We saw 2 storm briefings. I'm old enough to remember when elected officials didn't have storm briefings when it snowed, because this is New York and sometimes it snows. Mm-hmm. But, you know, It's good to know that there was no perceived problems here, that there was no real rivalry with New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, which sometimes happens. And, you know, you look at these photos and some heroes wear capes, some wear windbreakers.
Well said. With logos, with state logos on them. All right. Thanks very much to Jimmy Vielkind from Politico New York. We really appreciate your coming in.
Thanks for having me, Casey.
Well, at the end of the month, the Democratic National Committee will be choosing new leaders after a rocky 2016. 2 New York politicians are vying for spots, New York City Congresswoman Grace Meng, and the other is with our Matt Ryan.
After suffering a shocking loss in the presidential election and losing the Senate majority to Republicans, Democrats are regrouping as they look ahead to 2018 and beyond. That involves picking new leadership for the party, and one of the candidates for DNC vice chair joins us now, Assemblyman Michael Blake from the Bronx. Assemblyman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for having me.
Like many people out there watching, I love to listen to podcasts, whether I'm at home or in the car. And one that I recently listened to was Pod Save America, which was created by some former staffers of President Barack Obama. Jon Favreau, former speechwriter, one to name. They landed the last official interview Obama gave as president. He was asked to name some of the rising stars in the party. And one of the names he mentioned was a 34-year-old assemblyman from the Bronx named Michael Blake. What was that like when you heard that?
Well, you know, I'm a Christmas baby, so that means I can get double gifts, you know, on this coming year. My mom and my family were very excited. We didn't know the president was going to do that, but, you know, the president has become a big brother to me over the years. You know, I started with him in 2006 as one of 10 people that were trained in the Yes We Can training program. Mm. So for it to come full circle and now it be 11 years later, mm-hmm. it was definitely a blessing to have that moment happen. And for him to be able to talk about our candidacy provided a different level of legitimacy. You know, there were only 7 elected officials he mentioned mm-hmm. During that podcast. And so, you know, now it's for us to take the mantle and carry it forward.
Before we get into the case that you're making for DNC vice chair, let's go over your background. You touched on it a little bit. You've been with Obama since 2006. After the win, you became associate director of public engagement and deputy associate director of the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs. You worked on his reelection, right, in 2012. Then you won an open seat, move ahead to 2014, in the New York State Assembly, replacing Eric Stevenson, who was found guilty on corruption charges. The Observer did a very good deep dive on you and your candidacy, and it talked about how you were kind of opposed by the Bronx political machine, which seems pretty hard to overcome, but you did that. You beat five other people in the primary. How were you able to do that?
We organized on the ground, and you know we've all come together following the election. You know we have great support and camaraderie. We talk about building a better Bronx, and that's happening from all the work that's occurring in our great borough. Speaker Carl Heastie, you know, obviously first African American speaker and from the Bronx. Ruben Diaz Jr. is borough president. You know, when you think about Marcos Crespo, the Hispanic Task Force, we're able to build something together collectively. But you know we were very focused on organizing on the ground. How do you knock on doors? How do you make phone calls? Have a very targeted outreach, and we were able to connect with everyone. I'm born and raised in the Bronx. You know, I went to PS 79, 118, DeWitt Clinton High School, preached at our local church, Calvary United Methodist Church, member of Alpha Phi Fraternity Incorporated, 100 black men. You know, I was one of them. You know, I was a part of the community. And so to take that upbringing and then connect it, what we learned over the years of how to organize and be successful on the ground, you know, it led to us, you know, winning by 13 points in the primary, winning the general election, and fortunately being reelected last year, which in many ways is even more validating, because that means people have seen what you've been working on. They believe in your vision. We were unopposed in the primary and won in the general, and they believe you're continuing to do some things. And that's most important for me, being able to help my hometown.
And that must have been hard to overcome because, you know, you were in Washington for a lot of those years. You weren't in New York. And so some probably kind of projected you as the outsider.
Well, I think we were in New York. I mean, my mom's home was still here. I would always come back to preach and volunteer. We had the Alpha Eagles program. But, you know, I would always tease people, you know, Jamaican American, we're used to have multiple jobs. And I have a lot of things that we have going on. So we would go back and forth regularly. But the reality is, you know, even though I had the chance to do something that was once in a lifetime, being serve a president of the United States, I was always connected to my hometown. And so we were able to demonstrate and build on that momentum from there. And the people on the ground believed in that, and that's why they elected us and reelected us to office.
A couple years later, you are now running for DNC vice chair. On paper, that seems like a pretty big jump. Why do you think you're ready to do that now?
Oh, because we've been doing the work of organizing for years. You know, when you think about first what we've been able to do in the district and our whole vision of 3-2-1 of the 3 E's, economic development, education, and equality for all, which now we're saying is a year of inequity. How do you address the equity on the ground and provide that opportunity on the ground? We're just taking that to the next level. And you look at what I've been able to do over the last 12 years of organizing, winning in states all across the country, from Iowa for the Iowa caucus when I was constituency outreach director there, to Michigan where we won in the general election, went 7-7 in the Michigan general election. In 2012, I was the national deputy director of Operation Vote. We won 9 out of 10 battleground states. You know, this is taking what we've learned over the years and providing it now. And we say people often, you know, who do you want to be the faces and the voices of the party to help rebuild the party and be a part of the resistance against Trump? And so our vision is very clear. We call it leadership for tomorrow. You know, how do you build our bench? We've lost close to 1,000 legislative seats over the last 8.5 years. We only have 7 democratically elected secretaries of state. We have to build the bench across the country. How do we strengthen the party? You know, increase in SPP funding, state partnership program and funding, better message discipline, making sure we get message on the ground, more surrogates on the ground, and how do we embrace our future? Understanding that we have to have an economic message that resonates across the country and across New York, across all the places, but also making sure we're empowering communities of color, rural whites, millennials, LGBT, you know, all the different communities to be a part of what's happening here so that we can have not just Obama Democrats, Sanders Democrats, Clinton Democrats, getting everyone united to make sure we're building and moving forward in that way.
Well, let's address some of the well-known problems the DNC had in 2016. Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she resigned as chair after WikiLeaks released emails that showed her and some others favoring Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. Later emails leaked revealing that Donna Brazile shared questions with the Clinton camp ahead of the primary debates. There's kind of been a struggle for the soul of the Democratic Party. Is it Does it involve Hillary Clinton voters or Bernie Sanders voters? Do you sense you know, any lingering bitterness from that battle as you try to go ahead?
People are ready to move forward. Yeah. They're ready to build. You know, we're seeing very clearly what's going on in D.C. that we do not have the luxury to wonder about what happened last year. You know, you have someone in Donald Trump who is a demagogue in the White House, who quite frankly is putting forward a Muslim ban, let's call it what it is, finding ways to oppose communities across the country and really take us backwards. And so, you know, we've been able to build as a party. And you can see from what we've been able to build in our campaign, support across the country of people wanting to come together and what we're doing. We're running for one of the five vice chair positions, specifically the male at-large vice chair position, where the current vice chair, R.T. Ryback, former mayor of Minneapolis, has endorsed our candidacy to succeed him. And we have support across the country. Stuart Applebaum in New York, RWDSU, Speaker Heastie, Governor Cuomo, Senator Gillibrand, all have come on board. Mayor Nutter, former mayor of Philadelphia, Mayor Kasim Reed in Atlanta, you know, Steve Powell, UFCW in Illinois, out west, Matt Keating in Oregon, in the south, in the southwest, Deb Haaland, who's the only Native American chair in the country. You know, so people are saying we have to move forward, and they want to see how can we build, and specifically, which of the vice chair candidates have strong relationships with the rest of the team to be a team player and with the chair candidates. And we have worked closely with the leading four candidates for chair, more closely than the others. We've won more races than the other male vice chair candidates combined. So people are ready to move forward. They understand what's at stake right now.
You talked about some of your endorsements. Tuesday, Governor Cuomo came out and supported you. How big was that for you?
Oh, significant. You know, you look at that there are only 16 Democratic governors in the country. And that the governor is now the policy chair for the Democratic Governors Association, it sends a strong message for someone who has worked closely with the Clintons when he was a cabinet official himself, worked closely with President Obama, and also the efforts that he just did as relates to working with Senator Sanders. It sends a message across the country of what kind of leadership we can bring together. When you have someone like him, when you have someone like Senator Gillibrand, who is a leading voice on so many issues, especially for military families and sexual assault and pushing back and what's happening in those ways. It's demonstrating what we're building.
All right, we're running out of time. So a final question here. We'll circle back to your time with former President Obama. What tidbit or story can you give us about the now former president that maybe some other people don't know that's kind of stuck with you all these years?
You know, he's always just been someone that's attentive to the little things, but recognizing how it can have major impact. The first time I met him was at the Holiday Inn on the Hill in D.C. in 2006, and then we were there for the Yes We Can program, and folks were joking of, you know, how Blake had worked with other people. Maybe he didn't help you when you ran for Senate. I was like, come on, that's not the way you want to meet someone out the gate, you know? And then he said to me, Michael, dream big dreams. And that resonated with me. That resonated with me when my mother was able to visit in the Oval Office before he left, and that he remembered her and said, hi, Miss Lawrence, and asked her about her health and how she was feeling, or about my brother who served 30 years in the U.S. Army, Sergeant First Class, and welcomed them that way. Or when he would ask me during the campaign to play Uno with the girls on the campaign bus. He's just a wonderful human being. And the First Lady is just a transformational figure as well. And they're going to be very involved. That's why we're working with them on the My Brother's Keeper Alliance. I'm on the advisory board for that, making sure we continue to help the efforts for boys and young men of color. You know, New York State's the first state in the country for that, $20 million for that initiative. But, you know, President Obama, First Lady Obama are going to be very engaged. And hopefully we'll be able to win this race to be able to continue what they've been showing us. It's not just about winning one election, it's about transforming elections and generations thereafter.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Assemblyman Michael Blake, thanks for joining us. Candidate for DNC Vice Chair, good luck at the end of the month.
Thank you, Mayor.
We told you earlier about the new casino opening in the city of Schenectady. In this week's New York Now poll question, we ask if you think they will help the upstate economy. Let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org.
It's not the first time this has come up. So if someone says to me, have you thought about running for governor? I said, yeah, of course.
That was John Flanagan on speculation that he is mulling a 2018 run for chief executive. Our last poll question asked if you would like to see the Senate Majority Leader run for governor, and 57% said no, including Anthony in Eastchester watching on WNET. He says of Flanagan, unfortunately for him, he falls in the category of professional politician. Nancy via nynow.org, also a no vote. Flanagan supports only wealthy New Yorkers, as evidenced by his tax proposals. And finally, Tom and Latham said yes, adding anyone but Cuomo. You can vote this week by heading to nynow.org. While you're there, you can watch any of our past programs. We have a new podcast up, a New York Now Throwdown you won't want to miss, featuring Dave Lombardo of the New York State Watch and Zach Hutchins of the Business Council. For coverage of the state legislature, you can also check out the Capitol Confidential blog run by Casey and his crew. We have a link to it on our site, and you can also find it at timesunion.com. And coming up next week, Casey, two of the usually the more interesting budget hearings. We've got secondary education, Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia, and also the DEC.
Yeah, those are both going to be long visits by those respective commissioners. Education is, of course, very controversial. DEC, with everything that's been going on in Hoosick Falls, the contamination crisis involving PFOA, and other similar contamination crises around the state, I'm sure there are going to be lots of questions there as well.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all the time we have today. We leave you with video of skiers at Whiteface Mountain in the Adirondacks. I myself was at Gore Mountain last week, and it was terrific. Another fine Orta facility. I'm Casey Seiler.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.